This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation. Foundation.
The Foundation with Heart Grant is brought to you by Alive, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, the Deposit Insurance Corporation, Grand Bahama News, Popeyes, and Ross Electric Motors.
The Foundation.
It's rocking the nation. Howard Grant's the host, Guardian Radio Station 96.9. 12 to 2 is the time. You can call the show or use the text line. Yeah, he educates, he informs. He goes against the norm. He's really got that zeal. Plus, he's a child of God.
Foundation. It's the foundation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this absolutely gorgeous Monday afternoon, live and in full effect. We are so glad and truly grateful for the opportunity to kind of be in your space right now. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know if you're kind of snuggling up with a hot dog or a hamburger or whatever you're doing for this kind of a lunchtime. I don't know if you're fasting and on your water fast and make a determination that you're going to do some things before the end of this year. I don't know what this ninth month, the month of birth, has actually brought to the forefront for you, but I'm grateful for an opportunity to be here with you. It is a wonderful day, and we know today is September 11th. It is very important. I want to talk about this sometime this week. I don't know how we got to do this, but it's very important that we recognize and acknowledge that the Americans, that the world has shifted at this point. In 2001, I could remember exactly where I was as a security officer, fresh out of college from Cuba, looking for something to do, getting ready to marry this woman. I got to get a job. And I'm watching these planes go into the towers. And so now, 22 years later, we're here and identifying this day as a day of mourning. For more, so let's be very clear about this. I think it's the Western world that we're having these kind of conversations, but we're going to dive deeper into that this week. Guys, make sure you pick up your Guardian newspaper. Information's in there. Approval of the Prime Minister tops 60%. The survey results also show higher overall approval for the government. This was this like a special request that we've done? Can you do a survey for me? This is wild. We can talk about these things as we get deeper into that. Tuesday, someone called me and says, Howard, we should talk about politics on Tuesday. So we're going to take that time and do that. And make sure you go down, check my guys out. This is still the beginning of the month and doing some stuff. You guys are preparing to be able to move forward. I'm hoping Ethric Bow comes with me this week. Ethric has made some commitments to Howard to come and to come and to come and to come and to come. But he says that he's going to be coming, and hopefully that we can be able to have a conversation with him as it relates to what's going to happen on Thursday this week for Small Business Thursday. So go check out AFS Insurance at 3411 AFS. They are 407 Blue Hill Road South, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with your insurance needs. Guys, it's a beautiful day. If you had an opportunity to be able to follow me and see the information I've put out, I've gotten great contact. You know, we have good relationship. We, over the course of his position as the Minister of Education, over the course of his time in government. He has sat with us many a time, and also on my podcast, Patio Politics, to be able to dive deeper into the course and concepts and ideas of things of what's happening in the country. Always leading with education. I'm truly grateful for the opportunity to be able to sit with him today in sort of the backdrop of what has happened most recently when we've seen that exam results worsen. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to be able to introduce you to a very good friend, none other than Jeffrey Lloyd. Mr. Lloyd, say good afternoon to the Bahamian people out there.
Good afternoon to my beloved Bahamas.
Good afternoon, my brother. Listen, man, I'm so grateful for the opportunity that you've given me to kind of be able to sit here with you. I know that you are a legend in every aspect, and always talk to me. This is not an unfamiliar space for him. I know that you're getting used to it. They say, all right, I'm back in the seat. So it's a wonderful thing like that. Tell me what has been going on for you post the election in September.
Thank you so much again, Mr. Grant. Appreciate being here, sir. And I agree with you that today is a day of memory that transformed and challenged the Western societies, particularly the United States of America. Bahamians would, I'm sure, be aware that while most of Americans would have suffered on that day, there were also Bahamians who suffered. I can remember clearly sometime later when I did shows on the September 11th anniversary, there was a particular Bahamian young lady who worked at the Trade Center. She worked for FedEx, and she lost all of her employees on that day. So she was obviously traumatized. She made it to work late, and God bless she did, because she would have been one of those. So this is a day for us to remember with affection and some reverence the circumstance of those who lost their lives as a result of that day. I have been resting a bit immediately following the 2021 general elections, did some traveling with my family and to my family. Last year, I underwent a major surgery in the United States and have been recuperating since, and pretty much I am back fully now. I also restarted my law career with Colonel's Chambers on Montrose Avenue with my colleague, Mr. Paul Moss, second. And so here I am.
My brother, it is wonderful. You got my eyes gone way to the top. As you said, major surgery. I'm glad to see that you're here with us, and you're kicking in all cylinders.
Yep, doing very well, thanks.
That's a wonderful thing to see. Mm-hmm. I want to start it off like this. I want to talk to you more specifically about those worsening results. I know we don't have much time. You have so much I'd like to be able to talk to you about. So I want to dive right into it. Let's talk about this, right? Now, most recently, we would have been able to see this concept and idea that splattered across the newspapers, the print media, to talk about exam results worsening. Now, we saw that the minister, Hannah Martin, stated that it was as a result of a long-standing issues in education. I want to talk to you about that. We know that you were the Minister of Education. We know that Jerome Fitzgerald continues to be able to boast about the fact that his administration doubled the budget for education. We know that there are a great many men that poured and women that poured into education. And for now, the sitting minister, the current minister, to be able to speak about this issue that has been long-standing. Talk to me about that. Do you agree with that?
There are issues within education, and I'm sure during the course of this program, we are going to touch on some of those. My dear brother and friend, Mr. Fitzgerald, is not accurate. There was no doubling of the investment, I think the term was. Leading up to the 2012 general election, there was not. During my time, I made it a point, and Mr. Fitzgerald, Jerome, was one of those former ministers that I sought advice and counsel. We had many sessions in which we discussed the state of education. I felt it was my responsibility to do so. I had reason to call on my former law colleague, Mr. Alfred Sears, who at one time was Minister of Education, and also Desmond Bannister and Dion Folks, as well as Carl Bethel. And I think that, you know, education, Mr. Grant, is one of those transpartisan items within a country that should transcend partisan pedestrian politics. And it is unfortunate at times that it descends into that. I am here to be supportive of the present minister, the Honorable Glenys Hannah-Martin, also one of my friends, and whom I am grateful to say was also supportive of me when she was in opposition and I held the chair as Minister of Education. This issue of national exit exams, Mr. Grant, is one that is, of course, swirls in controversy. It is an unfortunate circumstance because I think that the Bahamian people, unfortunately, has not given the credit to the educational system or students that they deserve. And they lambast the achievement of our students based on one set of criteria being the education net exit exams. Let me suggest to you so most respectfully. At times, I am tempted to say that we should just simply get rid of the national exit exams. And I say it for this reason. When I went to school, we took what is known as the General Certificate of Education exams, the GCE. That had a 4-5-point grading scale, A, B, C, D, F. D was a grade that was considered poor, but passing. Some time ago, some 25 years now, we decided that we wanted to localize our national exit exams. And that was the creation of the BGCSE. And the reason for it was very simple. We wanted those exams to be relevant to what those students were learning in our society. When I took the GCE, exam talked about meadows and streams and mountains, which we do not have in the Bahamas. And so our people seem to be mentally trapped with the paradigm, the metric of the GCE, where D is in fact not a good grade. In fact, it is close to failing. Not so with the BGCSE. Those grades, 7-point scale, A to G, are positive grades of achievement. Obviously, an A is the highest that you can get in terms of the positive. The G is the lowest grade that you could get. But the average grade, Mr. Grant,
is a D,
which is not a failing grade.
It's a median.
As a matter of fact, according to the grading metric and the description thereof, a D is knowledge specific and appropriate to the task. Comprehension evident, critical thinking, problem-solving skills, satisfactory. That's our metric, the BGCSE. It is not the GCE. And if our people are going to remain trapped, if they are going to be closed-minded and refuse to accept and understand that this is a new paradigm, a different day, then we might as well scrap the exam because it condemns our students who do not do what they think, meaning the people as well, who get these Ds, which is already a very good grade in our BGCSE system. And if they're going to be lambasted and denigrated because they get a D, and I think it's unfair to the teachers, the system, and I think certainly
to the
students.
Do you think that would lead to the denigration that slips into the mindset of young children that says, hey, listen, if I'm not necessarily prepared, if I don't feel like I can get an A, if I don't even have the proverbial O levels, if I'm not equipped for that and I only can get a D, I might as well don't do it. Do you
exactly,
think that leads to the worsening?
Absolutely. And further, because we already have systems in our society, organizations, the University of the Bahamas, employment agencies, there's various businesses that says, we want you to have 5 BGCSEs with an A to C grade.
To be a cashier?
Not, yes.
To be a cashier.
So you already are further, you know, emphasizing the fact that the D is an unacceptable grade when, according to the scale, listen to what it says, comprehension, critical thinking, problem-solving skills, satisfactory.
Essentially what you're saying to is society perpetuates this idea, denigrates its people, and then comes back and say, you're not equipped, you're not ready, you're not this, you're not that.
Precisely. And then you attach to that a failing design on the system to say education is failing without realizing, certainly under our administration, We went from a 44% graduation rate to 59%. We went from a 1,700 or so preschool students enrolled in the public school system to over 6,000. So when you are only placing your emphasis and looking at one single factor as a definition of success in our educational system, I think it is unfair.
I want to take it here with you because for a long time here on the foundation, and as I slip into radio, politics, whatever I do in the country, I see two elements, the tangible and the intangible. I recognize, appreciate, and continue to be able to genuflect to the men and women that continue to develop our tangibles, the men of yesteryear, right? Post-independence, so forth and so on. But I believe that there was a gulf created, and the intangibles of who we are as human beings were not necessarily focused on. I'd like to talk about that. I'd like to talk about our society being grounded in faith. And because we're grounded in faith, I want to know whether or not the educational element is pouring into the intangible of the spirit of the young child.
Not sufficiently, and I think it's greatly a part of the home environment in which our children are raised. That is the great sadness that I find, unfortunately, that pervades the society that we live in. Now, when you say faith, yes, there is a respectable percentage of our people who live by faith, but I think there is more of an expression of churchianity than Christianity.
Churchianity?
Churchianity.
Let me write it down.
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
That is, yes, we attend church, and we are very, you know, we are very dynamic in our participation in church. But do those Christian principles, once taught by Jesus Christ and embellished throughout the New Testament, particularly the four synoptic gospels, are they enfleshed? Is there an attempt for them to be enfleshed? I don't think so.
Wow.
And this is what I believe. And it isn't, I respectfully say, yes, of course the education system has its role and responsibility. So does community. So does the government. So does the business community. But Mr. Grant, all of this begins at home. This begins from 9 months of gestation within the womb of some female. This inculcation, in a sense, that education is a priority, that respect for neighbors is a priority, that you say with manners and respect, good morning and good evening. That is a home parental function. And unfortunately, in our Bahamian society, we seem to believe that we can have children, but somebody else is supposed to raise them, in particular, the government.
It's an amazing
thing. And especially when it comes to education. No, I stood next in a line to a particular facility to a young lady who introduced herself as being a teacher at grade 4 in one of our public schools. And she, I asked her, give me one challenge that you have consistently in dealing with grade 4. She says, the parents. Without any hesitation, parents. I said, what do you mean? She said, they just simply are uninvolved. How could they not be involved with a grade 4 student who happens to be about 8, maybe 9 years of age? That is incomprehensible to me. I don't know how it is for you. But there is our challenge. And we have seen this in studies after studies. If you go to the administrators of our respective public schools and ask them, what percentage of the report cards are collected on report card day? It will be disheartening to you, I respectfully suggest, Mr. Grant. And it has not gotten much better than it was decades ago.
I want to do this with you. I like this. I want you to know that I enjoy this. But I like to swim. I can float, but I like to dive deeper into these conversations. And what I do is always try to be able to look at the contrast between where we are and where we were. A lot of people don't necessarily agree with that. They believe that where we are is just continuing to move, but not necessarily assessing whether or not we are in the space that we were called to be. After 1973, with the introduction of independence and everybody running after these particular things, something happened between 73 and 77. Whilst the concept and idea settled with people to become independent, that independent mindset and becoming self-actualized seeped into the minds of the Bahamian people. Conversations in the home started to shift. Child, you better go get yours. This concept and idea that God first saw every man for himself and God first saw, that creeped into and broke up the monotony of our sleeping fishing village. So the question that I have for you is, the pursuit of independence, the pursuit of wealth and coming out of these things, richness and the acquisition of stuff, has shifted the mindset of the next generation of parents. And so while they're working, subconsciously, the government of the Bahamas at the time said that steeped into the DNA of who our people is now, we're going to do the heavy lifting. We're going to take care of this. We're going to do all these particular things. And now we see the chickens coming home to roost as it relates to parents saying, well, why the government can't take care of those children? Talk to me about it.
Couldn't say it better. I could not absolutely positively said it better. And our problem is, unfortunately, over these past 50 or so years, it's been the politician, the political class, the political directorate that has fostered a sense of entitlement where we did not give people the responsibility of, as it were, pulling yourselves up by your own bootstraps in addition to assisting your neighbor to pull themselves up by their bootstraps as well. You see, we got the impression, unfortunately, with our Bahamian people, to make them believe that the government is supposed to be taking care of everything. Come to us. We are your masters. We will take care of it. You don't have to worry about this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, look at where we are. Mm-hmm. And the defect in our parental responsibility is a prime example of this. Even though in 1962, when we formulated the Education Act, in Section 22, I think it is, it was very clear about who the responsibility lies, with whom the responsibility lies in respect of the raising and the well-being of children, and it is the parents. Well, actually, the law says it's the home. Who leads the home? The parents. Mm-hmm. But after about 1965, 66, 67, certainly there seemed to be a gross abdication of that responsibility and an unwillingness by somebody, and it usually has to be the state, to hold those parents accountable. And the law prescribes that accountability, even though I think it's a meager sanction, mind you, $50, $75, and so on. I am not here to support that you were going to put parents in jail, necessarily, although I think that certainly has to be a resort. But there are some parents who necessarily must feel the weight of the law in a way that is aggressive and uncompromising because they have neglected and are neglecting the well-being of their child or children. And I'm not just talking about putting a uniform on their backs. I'm not talking only about giving them $5 for lunch. It's much, much, much more than that. Mm-hmm. And as a result, Mr. Grant, if that is not addressed successfully and effectively, you and I and a whole host of other Bahamians eventually have to pay for it.
This is absolutely amazing, ladies and gentlemen. When we get back, I'd like to be able to talk more about this concept and idea of the much, much, much more. We're sitting here with none other than Jeffrey Lloyd, diving deep into education and really being able to take the kind of introspection to say, where do I stand in this position? How do we, I, me, make a difference for the future of this country? We're here with the Foundation, 96.9 FM radio. Howard Grant and your company. We'll be right back after this.
Foundation.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The Foundation.
Let me ask you a few questions. What's your name?
Pam.
Favorite food?
Steak.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Is your money safe?
It's under my bed, I guess so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why?
Unless your money is in a bank or credit union that's a member of the Deposit Insurance Corporation, there's no guarantee it's safe.
Yeah, but what if something happens to the bank?
Your Bahamian dollar deposits are insured up to $50,000, so you'd still be ahead. Plus, your mattress might catch fire. Then what?
Man, those banks and credit unions are looking good right about now.
Visit the DIC's website at www.dic.bs. Protection for your money, guaranteed with DIC.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them 242-356-0249.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation. The foundation. The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio. Howard Grant and your company, The Foundation, here sitting with none other than Jeffrey Lloyd. Forgive me, we're going to do this a little bit fast-paced because I know that Mr. Lloyd doesn't have all the time in the world to kind of be to shoot the breeze with us. I want to get to some solutions. I want to talk to these particular things. We're talking education. We're talking about giving this sort of introspection to say that it is our fault also. Can we not levy the weight of this burden on the shoulders of the government with the expectation that externally, you take care of my children. I birth them, you take care of them. But I think we have the responsibility of understanding our part and raising decent citizens. Talk to me.
That's right.
Decent citizens. Mm-hmm. Because your indecent son, who I caught up with my daughter, that's a whole different story. You're getting deep. It's too much, right? But I want to know about this. I want you to address some of the social and economic factors that impact students' academic performance. I want to talk about those things.
Mr. Grant, again, sir, not to be repetitive, but it starts at the home. If parents do not see and prioritize the value of education, then there is going to be serious negative consequences. It is as simple as that. You have no other remedy that will be in the long term effective. It cannot be so. Learning must be a priority in the home. Respect and responsibility must be a priority in the home. Accountability and transparency must be a priority in the home. Read to your children 5-10 minutes a day. Let them see that for education for you is important. Let them see that you are communicating and engaging with their school. You're showing up for school activities. You're going to meetings at the school. The teacher told me that one of the parents, this young lady who was teaching grade 4, she sent her a WhatsApp saying the child needs A, B, C, and so on. The parent writes back, "Stop blowing up my phone because you don't pay this bill." She writes back, "The teacher, ma'am, I'm trying to help your child. Your child.
Blowing up the phone again.
You're blowing up my phone because you don't pay my bill. Your child. I'm helping your child." This is multiplied across the system to a nauseating degree, sir. I've been in the system, I can tell you. Okay? When I ran the YEAST program for 13 years, and I insisted that parents attend parenting classes once a month, I had major pushback. It was only when I threatened to expel their student from school that they sure attend. Yes. And of course, because they attended and they were benefiting so richly from what we were discussing and how I was sharing da-da-da-da-dum, they never ever wanted to miss a session. But this is the necessity that is required. Again, I'm not suggesting that we put parents in jail, but maybe some deserve to be there in some form or fashion to wake us up as a people to understand. No, it ain't the minister's fault, my darling. It isn't the member of parliament. It ain't the government. Yes, we have a responsibility. Yes, we have a role to play. Yes, we have to do our part. No question about it. The church too, of course, businesses. But what about you? And another thing, Mr. Grant, and I say this to students all the time, sir, it's your education, you know. You, grade 7, grade 8, you're getting now to be a person of exposure, understanding, and so forth. My boy, it's your education, you know. You need to take an active part. Get out of the stance and onto the playing field of life and participate in your own learning. My grandmother used to say, boy, get your learning. Nobody could take that from you. Mm-hmm. And I preach that to young people every single day. Brother man, this is about you. You have to also be active in your own education. You have to take responsibility. You have to see the value of this in addition to your parents.
You know, as I sit here and listen to you, I see some of the ills that exist in our society with the transition of moving from the British monarch pronounced into this kind of a self-awareness and self-independence, right? Because your grandmother, under the Union Jack, being taught by the crown in many ways, said to you and understood the necessity and value associated with education. With the transition and this concept and idea of neocolonialism that has shifted, let me tell you why. Because a lot of what you say, I feel like it's theory. And theoretically, this could actually work. But the practical application that exists in our society today is we do what our parents see. I've never seen my parents. Generally, as a society, I never see my parents read no book. I never see them do this. They was working. They had to do these particular things. Why I got to do that? I ain't got to read nothing. I just need to know how to fix the car. I just need to know. And then this perpetuation and idea of being able to learn a trade and a vocation still negates the fact that you need to learn to read. You need to learn to comprehend. We don't have comprehension in this country. A lot of people wrestle with this idea of comprehension and not necessarily understanding that critical thinking could be able to cause us to blossom. They reject this. Talk to me about it.
Unlike other Caribbean countries, where the economic vitality is not on the same scale as ours, having us, by the geography of our good luck, sit on the doorstep of the greatest nation in the history of the world, greatest economy, there has not been in my lifetime, a direct connection and a relationship between academic qualifications and a job. For a long time, and still today, not necessary for you to be qualified academically in order to get a job. Unlike, like I say, our Caribbean brothers and sisters, where circumstance of a nice job will require you to compete than many others who have very good academic qualifications.
Absolutely.
So this sense that education is not valuable or necessary, as a matter of fact, has been imprinted in the consciousness of our Bahamian people.
That's crazy.
It is, absolutely. And it is dangerous because the time has come and it is going to continue to come. We're no longer 80,000 when I was a young child. 80,000 members of our Bahamian society. We're now creeping up to 400,000. It's going to eventually get much greater. It will come down to getting a job that you will have to prove yourself to be academically qualified, Mr. Grant. Otherwise, we're going to be in a very serious situation.
How do we take that on the kid's head? How do we take this kind of an idea that's for their mind? That's the fellows who are getting off to the States to school. They're getting to Europe to school. They're getting to Canada. I stay right here. I need all this education. Talk to me about it.
Well, it used to be that way. But now more and more, the difficulty is in securing employment, you have to prove yourself to be worthy. Because now, you know, there's been an increase not only in the profile of technical and vocational careers and education, but there's now been a demand for anybody with certain technical skills, better carpentry, so on and so forth, to prove certification. And you said it brilliantly earlier, sir. Certification isn't just about a matter of actually being able to do the work. But can you comprehend? Mm-hmm. Can you read? I mean, can you actually interpret what is going on here? Because nobody obviously is going to invest in you in a skill requirement without that particular satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So we are only setting ourselves up for a colossal failure down the road if we do not take the bull by the horn now. And we should have done it before, but certainly now. To give our people understanding, and we've been talking about this meritocracy and a merit-based society for a long time, that is coming. You're not going to avoid that. The necessity of being able to prove your worth by way of qualifications and certification is coming.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to you about this before we get out of here because, you know, in a due time, we're going to have to get it. I want to do this. when you start to talk about conviction, when we start to talk about critical thinking, in my mind, always come back the three R's: reading, writing, arithmetic, right? This kind of regurgitation, this ability to, you know, Grammy say your recitation. I don't know if you...
I know you remember that. Say your recitation, baby, right? I was like a little boy dancing, doing the recitation, right?
And things have changed in our country. This perpetual regurgitation, just being able to absorb information and giving it out, doesn't work anymore. Under your administration, COVID-19 showed that changed everything.
That's right, sir.
Under your administration, yes, COVID-19 changed everything.
Yes, sir.
And sort of the introduction of technology took its position. We saw you start to talk about whiteboard technology, apps, and so forth and so on. We saw your administration had the necessity for being able to put Wi-Fi in the parks and all these things. That all great initiatives. I want to know from you, this sort of position that exists right now. Do you believe that we're prepared to be able to absorb and apply technology and move in this direction the way that we need to at this time?
Much better than we have been before. When I came to office, there were several attempts at digitizing the educational system. When we came, because of the emphasis by the Prime Minister, Honorable Dr. Hubert Minnis at the time, whose commitment was to transform education, one of which was technology. And when we left office, it was about 90% the system digitized. Matter of fact, Mr. Grant, on September 1st, 2019, for the first time in the history of the Bahamas and in the Caribbean, we instituted a virtual school. There have been many decades in the Bahamas when we talked about creating a distance learning environment. And why? Because students in those far-flung islands and the underserved communities were not given the same equitable privilege of acquiring an educational an education to the same degree as persons in New Providence and Grand Bahama and Abaco and so on. Why? Because teachers refused or unwilling to go into those areas. When I came to education in 2017, my first graduation was in Auckland. I attended. Five students. They were only able to take five BGCSE exams. God help them if they did not pass. And even so, did not get an A to C. Remember what we talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. The country is not going to recognize your grades unless it's A to C. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the scholarships. Five BGCSEs, all A to C. So, why? Not enough teachers in maths, in science, in foreign language. Thank God for the virtual school. Now those students are able, just like the students in New Providence who have got an in-person teacher, to be able to take those subjects in their respective schools or in the environment wherever it is created by the administrator at that particular time, unlike the students in New Providence, Grand Bahama, and elsewhere, qualify for a scholarship or qualify for entrance in the University of the Bahamas, qualify for the quality employment opportunities, because now they can compete. And this is what the United Nations Development Sustainable Development Goals number 4 speaks to: equitable access to education. Up to the time that we came to office, 2017, unfortunately, that was not the case. What made the difference? Technology. And I hope to God, and I believe that they are, that this particular administration is pressing forward with not only for the purposes of teaching, but also for administration, for planning, for ensuring that your system is well-run, well-managed, work out the kinks with the technology so that any student, even if they happen to be in New Providence, Grand Bahama, otherwise, who may have to stay home because they've got a broken leg or they're sick otherwise, can tune in by way of their tablets or their laptop or their desktop and continue with their education. Further, Mr. Grant, we are in Hurricane Valley. There will come a day when another hurricane is going to walk through these islands. And it may not knock out all of our islands or even one or two of them, but it certainly is going to impact us in such a way that we may not be able to go to school from an in-person standpoint. This is where technology comes in, sir.
I want to know something. We start to talk about this kind of an evolution in all these things. And while we started off the conversation in the show talking about Minister Hannah Martin being able to take on a position, they say that these are long-standing issues. Things have evolved and kind of denigrated in a sense in many instances. But I'd like to know to you, you talked about technology, I'd like to know from you, have these challenges evolved over the 30 years, the challenges that we've faced? And do you believe that teachers, what kind of a role do you envision the teachers playing to restore this kind of a hope enthusiasm? I know we talked about the home. I know we talked about, the importance of learning and respect and managing responsibility in the home. But I'd like to know, how do you infuse a sense of hope and rejuvenate that spirit in the students as we move into those directions?
Second most critical factor in the achievement of students, in addition to the home, is teachers and teaching. Teachers and teaching. Mr. Grant, I wish to suggest that the whoever has the authority to separate the Department of Education from the public service. Yes. Why? I don't believe that teachers are going to achieve the respect that they deserve, certainly from a compensation and a work environment standpoint, as long as they are in the public service. And here's what I mean. Teachers with a master's degree who sits in a classroom and has to manage the number of students that she does and has to do the work that she does in the public sector at the moment makes exactly the same salary as another master's degree holder anywhere else in the public service. Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Social Services. That's rapidly unfair. That teacher's responsibility and the demand and expectation on that teacher, so those other master holders could not come even close. Separate them so that they can have, meaning separate the department so the teachers and all others can have their own pay scale, the same way that NIB has its own pay scale, Water and Sewage has its own pay scale, Airport Authority has its own pay scale, number one. Number two, see all these challenges that we have from time to time with regard to getting schools ready in the summertime and all of that? That's not the blame to be placed on the Ministry of Education as such, because we don't have the control over the infrastructural development of our 260 buildings under the remit of the educational establishment. Yet, we have to go to the Ministry of Works for those buildings if there's need for repairs to be assessed. We have to go to the Ministry of Works for those contracts to be prepared and negotiations with those respective contractors. In many instances, despite the Herculean effort by the Ministry of Works, and I don't want to down them because I know they're working very hard, they simply don't have the resources to manage 260 buildings wherever there might be repairs needed. Plus, plus the many other ministries and departments of government that they also have responsibility for, plus their own work, whether it's road building, road repairs, bridges, docks, and so on. It's just unfair. Okay? Again, like I say, they do a great job, but there's a certain limitation because of resources. Principally, technical resources in persons. And most people are not going to come back with a master's degree in engineering and work for the government for $35,000 a year when that's one project for them. Okay? Then we separate Department of Education and make it its own authority, educational authority. Then you have control over your budget. Then the minister or the executive director or whoever is in charge at that time can operate according to your own schedules. Be accountable. Nobody is saying that you just have a run of the mark. Be accountable. You have responsibility. You have control now of your own schedule, your own paradigms, your own budgets. You now can execute with responsibility and proficiency and efficiency in a manner that the system deserves, number one. Number two, Mr. Grant, you see what happened to Dorian? You need to be able to respond on a dime as an educational assessment. And you need to be able to do it so without having to go through all of the bureaucracy that now obtains in the public service, right? Given the authority, you'll be able to do that. Of course, I know that some educators and some people who are in the ministry may say, oh, well, you know, if we leave the public service, we're going to lose all of our benefits. No, they all can be imported into that new authority. You lose absolutely nothing. What you do gain is efficiency, proficiency, and a dynamism to respond as needed, when needed, for the benefit of your clients who happen to be students and their families.
You know, I got to talk deeper about this. Ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, we have to take this break. We're going to go to break, we're going to go to news, and be right back with none other than Jeffrey Lord. I got to talk about this education authority and the concept associated with that. When we get back, we're going to dive deeper into it after this.
Foundation.
foundation. The foundation.
The foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The foundation. The foundation.
It's Whopper Wednesday every Wednesday at Burger King Nassau. Make your Wednesday sizzle and sink your teeth into a flame-grilled beef patty topped with tomatoes, fresh-cut lettuce, mayo, pickles, ketchup, and sliced onions, all on a toasted sesame seed bun with fries for only $5.95, including VAT. This Whopper Wednesday, grab a friend and head down to your favorite BK Nassau location for a flame-grilled Whopper made your way with crisp fries for only $5.95. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Don't spend hours sending individual messages to your customers. Use SMS messaging instead. With Cable Bahamas Business Solutions SMS messaging, you can send personalized messages to hundreds or even thousands of recipients instantly. It's quick, effortless, and cost-effective. Plus, it ensures that your messages are delivered directly to your customers' cellular phones, guaranteeing higher engagement. Save time and boost your outreach with SMS bulk messaging. Call Cable Bahamas Business Solutions at 601-8911 in Nassau or 602-8811 in the Family Islands.
It's back to school season again. Send your kids off with everything they need, from books, uniforms, to school supplies, all with a Fidelity personal loan. Apply today for a chance to win amazing back to school prizes. Call 352-6676.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Foundation. The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Monday afternoon, September 11th, out here, really being able to shake the foundation of a great deal of things that's happening and do this introspection. I think this is good. I think this is sort of a come-to-Jesus moment. Conversations that we've always had on the air, and I know that a lot of persons see this through a political lens, but I dare you to look at the national issues and say, how do we make this thing better? What can we do to get to a better position? Guys, I want you to be able to be a part of it. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the Family of Islands, 242-300-5720, or hit me up, 422-4796. We're sitting here with none other than Jeffrey Lloyd and being able to talk about these things. Now, when we left off, Mr. Lloyd, you started to talk more specifically about an educational authority. We've seen most under your administration being able to see the Ministry of Disaster Preparedness and Management of Reconstruction take on an authority. And now, hindsight being 2020 and politics being what it is, we see that there is significant scrutiny associated with that. I want to talk to you about this. Do you believe that this concept and idea of an authority can actually work?
Well, it does work.
The scope of education.
Absolutely. It does work. And I'm not suggesting that you leave the Ministry of Education as it is. The ministry, regulator, responsible for the governing in terms of policies, regulation, and so on. But the executive management of education, I say respectfully, an authority.
So you, for me, for just listening to the rhythm of the conversation and the direction that we're taking, there will be subconsciously a greater alleviation off of the home itself and the yoke and responsibility of being able to develop quality students on the teacher again. Y'all are getting paid more?
Well, I'm not so sure, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I don't think that this is a one-horse race. It has to be a comprehensive approach. We consider Finland to be, and I say we, I'm talking about the rest of the world because of their matrix, one of the best, if not the best, educational system in the world. That was a 50-year project. And it was only successful because people in that country decided they were going to tackle the educational system and the education of their students, and they came together as a society, everybody. Mrs. Hannah Martin talks about everybody hands on deck. I always used to say everybody's business. Education is everybody's business. There cannot be a separation. You must have the involvement of the home, no question about it. Must have the government's involvement. Must have businesses. Businesses today can adopt schools or adopt programs in schools to support the advancement of the education of our people. They must provide for that. You must have the unions. You must have the churches. It is not just one or two or everybody, Mr. Grant, has to become involved. Yes, of course, teachers have a responsibility. And teaching, I say that we have to have the very best, and we are not going to attract the best students. There has been a diminution in the number of candidates entering the University of the Bahamas education program. Why? Because people say it's low pay, poor working conditions, a lot of work, a lot of expectation. And of course, in their subconscious, they hear everybody in the society ripping education, which, as I said earlier, is unfair to the system. It's unfair to teach, unfair to students.
I want to touch
so there's no, invitation by a student coming out of whichever school when there's an attractiveness in law or attractiveness in medicine, attractiveness in engineering or being a pilot or being an accountant. But if we increase the profile of education and teachers by way of pay, by way of working conditions, by respect for that profession, I think you'll see a transformation.
So
but
this
is not
lead
only
to
them.
Retention and job satisfaction.
Absolutely. When I left education in 2021, some 80 or so students were entering into the educational portal at the University of the Bahamas. Bear in mind, a couple of years before that, some 120 were entering. Now, when you consider attrition, you're getting less students entering the profession from the University of the Bahamas than you would have been previously. And look at the number of teachers who are leaving. Look at the number of persons who are retiring for any number of reasons. We have already seen the world, OECD, I think, gives a prognostication that there will be some 60 million teachers short by the year 2030. 60 million across the globe. But we already see that loss here in the Bahamas. It was difficult during our time. It is difficult for Mrs. Hannah and her time to attract the teaching.
Going back to technology, the loss or the leakage that exists is not necessarily because a desire not to be able to pursue education. Education is ever ready and attainable to everyone now, whether it's YouTube, whether it's the AI technology, whatever these particular things are. And so persons are running into whether it's the development of the apps or the development of those softwares to be able to do those things as a comparison to the traditional avenue of what teaching is.
If I may respectfully interrupt, sir, and please forgive me.
Go ahead.
And the reason I say that is because the formative years between, say, age 3 and 7, 8, 9 are most critical.
Mm-hmm.
Those students don't have the discipline. They don't have the self-management skills to utilize technology. They need an in-person guide facilitator to assist them in that formative years. Those formative years are absolutely critical. I mean, if there's any one place that you have to in the education system, and I'm not suggesting one place, but if there is one place, it must be at those foundational years. Must be.
I like that. I want to talk to you like this, though, because as you started to talk about this, the one thing that pops up is the contrast and people running into not necessarily a career, but into finances. People want to start. This is expensive as hell to live out here. Let's talk about this. On Friday, I had a show. And we were just having a conversation, Garth Rosborough and I. And I said to him, it is absolutely impossible for you to hold steadfast to survival in this society and patriotism simultaneously. Just think about this. If you are in survival mode and trying to be able to grab everything you can and doing whatever it can just to exist and make it to tomorrow, patriotism loses its kind of a flair, and a desire for country loses its flair. The exact same thing we find in almost every subsector of society. If people are clinging steadfast to survival from an economic standpoint, from a social standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, how can they now release that to be able to get to this steady utopian society that we're talking about?
Well, it's difficult. Absolutely. Any survival mechanism, any survival threshold is going to attract or elicit from you a desperation. You don't have time to think about anything else except your continuing sustenance. So you have no argument with me on that scale. This is all the more reason why our emphasis and our investment in education is so critical, so that our people can ascend from just the simple survival state unto the thriving state in our society. And we have had many opportunities to do that, and I suggest to you that we still have the opportunity to do that before we descend further into the unfortunate situation that we sometimes seem to be headed towards.
Yeah, you talked a little earlier about the necessity for being able to identify every subsector as a part of this, and I wanted to be able to expand upon that because I feel like the foundation should be able to adopt a school. I feel like we could do that, right? And but you started to go on about how every subsector, whether it's the union, whether it's the private sector, can be able to be a part of that. I'd like to know about that. I'd like to know from you about the relationships that exist within the Ministry of Education and being able to branch out into all the subsectors of the government departments and whatnot. How do you retain this relationship and enthusiasm to ensure that the child gets everything that he or she needs as it relates to education to blossom?
Somebody has to be the driving force, directing mind and will. And for the moment, let us say it is the state, more specifically, it's the Ministry of Education. And I'm sure that all governments have done this, and that is foster relationship with all of these subsets of our society. But let me give you a small example. When there was the COVID and the pandemic came upon us, and we had to find ways in which we could get students back in an in-person learning environment as quickly as possible. Because, you know, as I had said to you off here, we realized by some measurement that some 30% of our students were living in homes that had no internet. Mm-hmm. If 30% of your 45,000 students are living in that environment and we are in a pandemic where there is no in-person learning, that means those students are not learning. What we invited the churches to do was to come and partner with the Ministry of Education and enable us to use their facility and to also loan some of their staff members or members of their church to be facilitators, where we could put in a screen and through the virtual school enable these students to continue with their education. Only a few of the churches came forward, and those that did says, you're going to have to give us something, some money. You have to pay those staff members. You would have to assist us with the power bill or so on and so forth. I'm serious. All right? Now, we certainly have done so. We simply didn't have the funding because now 20% of your economy has been shot as a result of Dorian. But this is what I mean, Mr. Grant. This is what I mean.
I got to write this down.
There was a particular school that one of our major resort facilities adopted from a hospitality standpoint and invested some considerable sums of money in that school to assist them in preparing those students in the hospitality career. And it became very, very profitable and attractive. At one of another school, doing very poorly in academics, right here in the inner city, the Rotary Club got together and decided that they were going to provide breakfast once a week. They increased it to twice a week, inviting any student from 8 o'clock on to come and get some breakfast. That extended to every day. Mr. Grant, I can tell you that virtually every student in that particular school was on school campus at 8 o'clock in the morning.
To get something to eat.
To get something to eat. The genius of the vice principal at the time, who was a reading specialist, said, you know something? We have them here now. Let us now institute some reading facility. School went from being at the bottom of the barrel to number 2 in the system. Okay? This is the ingenuity. This is the genius. This is the collaboration.
This is strategy.
Yes! This is what I'm talking about, sir. And we know this. We have known this back in 1960, 72, when the government then under the leadership of late Sir Lyndon Penlin did a white paper on education. 20 years later, Mr. Ingram did the task force on education. 10 years later, shared vision for education, and so on. The NDP, National Development Plan, 2015, mm-hmm. If you go and read every single one of those studies, those reports, you will see that they emphasize essentially the same thing. It's just a matter of us doing it, sir.
You know, I know that you don't have much time with me. You're going to be out of here before 1:30, and I'm grateful for the time that you spent together, but I need to know our vision. I know that we've get incrementally, when I ask strategic questions, that you provided answers, but give me the overarching vision that you see this country moving towards as it relates to education well into the future. We're celebrating our Jubilee. We're in the year of our Jubilee. This is our golden time. This is a time that we reflect and prepare to move forward. Tell me where you see our country into the future.
Socially advanced, socially, educationally, technically, and intellectually advanced through the portal of education. That's the only way. Socially, intellectually, economically advanced through the portal of education. And that absolutely means everybody's business. That means every hand is on deck. And it has to be. Somebody's got to drive it, Mr. Grant. Mm-hmm. And I suggest you respectfully, it has to be the state. I know that the union, I know that the church, I know that the business people have their role and responsibility, but somebody got to be the coagulating force to pull this together and make it happen. Make it happen.
Under your time as leader, we know that there was significant turmoil that actually spilled out to the forefront between, as you indicated, the union. And now we're understanding that the spirit of gimme, gimme, even got the church. But let's talk about this. How do you, not just necessarily with the union, but how do you get better collaborate with the government to address teacher concerns and to improve the overall education system? How
open dialogue. And you must involve your people. There was not one single decision that I made, there was not one single decision that was made in the Ministry of Education in which every single stakeholder, including the executive management team, it's not involved, intimately involved. As a matter of fact, let me give you a small example very quickly. National exams. There was a major decision to be made with respect to whether we should have the exams in 2020 because the students had been out of school, this, that, so on and so forth. Yes, sir? Mm-hmm. I had a meeting of the executive team at the Ministry of Education and said to them, as I have said to them and from the very beginning, we are the cabinet of the Ministry of Education. There is no one person here that makes a decision. We are going to come in this instant to a unanimous decision. And if anybody, meaning any member of the team, has a reason that we should not go forward with the examination, speak now, let's debate it, let's discuss it, and we will make a decision. There was unanimous decision by that executive team that we will go forward. Even though there were naysayers outside who said, no, let's scrap it, no, we shouldn't do it, and so on. Okay? Mm-hmm. That examination, 15 out of the 27 subjects in the BGCSE showed improvement. 6 out of the 12 or 13 subjects in the BJC showed improvement. We made the right decision. But it wasn't Jeffrey Lloyd. It wasn't the cabinet. It was the Ministry of Education's leadership team. So my point to you, sir, is you've got to have open dialogue. And you don't have all of the answers as Mr. Minister or you, Mr. Permanent Secretary, or you, Ms. Director. Everybody has a perspective, and that perspective is valuable. That perspective is necessary to be included in that consideration.
This concept of inclusion is a wonderful one, and you give them the opportunity to be able to move forward. I want to know about which incentives, elements that you can use to increase the morale that exists among teachers. What can we do to increase morale among teachers? I know we talked about money. I know we talked about giving them the incentives and paying them accordingly. But what else elements do you think that we can use to increase morale amongst teachers?
Well, certainly get them involved.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones in the classroom. They are the leaders in that classroom. They're the ones who can tell you what's happening with those students. So absolutely get them involved and respect their involvement. Number one. Number two, we need to devolve some of our leadership, so our management down to. I remember at one of our first meetings that I had with the administrators, I said to them, and this was shocking to them, you are the CEO of that campus. I need you to tell me what you need so that I can assist you to do the best job that you can do. But their expectation, derived out of habituation, having been conditioned this way, is to wait for Massa or someone at the top to tell them what to do.
This is wild.
Yes. But no.
You are the administrator on campus, the principal, vice principal, senior master, mistress, and so on. You have department heads. You know what the school needs. You know how best you can run the school better. Tell me, minister, and let me take it to cabinet and says, this school needs this. This school will run much better than this. This school deserves to have this consideration, that consideration.
So why did I feel like their autonomy has been castrated?
I don't know.
Because we see that a lot, not just in the school and the education, subsectors of government don't feel like they have the autonomy to make decisions for what they know is best for their division. Do you believe that this needs to change?
Absolutely. When I came to the Ministry of Education, that was the expectation. The minister says this. The minister says, oh, no, you are the director. You are the deputy director. Your involvement is critical, necessary, and will be valued and respected. Because, of course, I came out of the private sector, and this is how we operate in the private sector. No, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You're I don't know your job in the as director as best as you do. Tell me what is best. Deputy Director of Planning, tell me. Superintendent of the Western District, you tell me what is best. And let us together collaborate so that we could find the best way. And by the way, if you got a great idea, I suggest respectfully you go with it. Go ahead. I think that we have...
That's sort of the open-door policy that can be able to speak to a progressive country. If this mindset permeate all in leadership, that your open-door policy swinging on both hinges, you can be able to come and go out as you please to be able to find growth and development, we'll see a different country. We will see a different country.
The janitresses used to come up to my office and give me ideas, thoughts, and expressions about what's going on in their department. Janitresses in the Ministry of Education, and they were welcome to do so. You didn't have to go through this, and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. I'm walking through, and they would ask, Minister, can I speak to you? Of course you can speak to me. Absolutely. We are here on one team. I have a responsibility. You have a responsibility. And mine is no more important than yours. Yours no more important than mine. Because, sister, if you don't clean those bathrooms and they start to dysfunction, we got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of people, and I can wrap it up with this. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you send a couple of texts if you want to be able to do it. I can read your text for you. Like I said, he has to go before 1:30, so I don't be decent about this. And sort of the wrap up, I want to be able to say this to you. Before the introduction of this concept and idea of the educational authority, there is a desire to see you back, not just necessarily in education, but charting the course forward for, and these are some texts coming through, charting the course forward for leadership of the country. A lot of persons want to know, is there any further aspirations to dive deeper into national development for education or through any politics or whatever you're going to be doing as we move into another tier of a political season in our country?
Mr. Grant, I am a Bahamian, and I love my country, and I love my Bahamian people. And I am here to serve my people to whatever extent, in whatever capacity that they may ask me to serve, except I do not and will not accept any nomination to be a member of parliament again in this lifetime. Now,
that is wild.
Now, in Matthew's gospel, somewhere around chapter 1 or so, the Lord came to Joseph, I think, in a dream. Okay? Well, if the angel...
Joseph was he was leaving by this time.
Yeah.
He didn't make his mind up.
So if the angel of the Lord comes to me in a dream and says that you are to go back into politics, I'm going to ask the angel to produce his passport.
Okay, don't do this.
I know. You got to produce his passport to make sure he's from heaven. And I want to see the directive by God's signature. But other than that, no, sir. I don't expect that I will be changing my mind in this response. However,
this is
I'm happy to serve our people because I am a Bahamian. I love my country. I ain't going nowhere. And I am more than delighted to throw my whatever abilities I have into the ring and make a contribution. And I don't say it for Jeffrey Lloyd. Everybody needs to do exactly the same thing. Get up off yourself and stop complaining. You, Miss Parent, go to the school and participate. Go pick up your child's report card. Be interested. Show them that education is important to them. Do that little small thing. If you're able to, serve in Rotary. If you're able to, in the Kiwanis. If you're able to, serve in your church. Go and volunteer on a soup line or whatever. Do something for the benefit of your country. But if you're asking me about frontline politics, the angel got to show me his passport and got to be up to date, no expiry,
And he also got to show me where God sent him as power of attorney to come and ask me to go back in politics. And so, I want to see God's signature, and I want to see it being what you say, notarized.
From the heavenly notary.
Heavenly notary.
You, this is too much. Ladies and gentlemen, that is, listen to me. I got to laugh at you because all I can see pop up, Dalton Thomas, the donkey talk to you. All these things happen, even in this particular pursuit, and we don't want to see you swallowed by a whale. So we're hoping that if the time comes, my brother, and you're given an opportunity, that leadership is definitely on you. I still see a fire in your belly. I still hear that sort of a passion to be able to see the country reform. And whilst you're here in the land of the living, we have to be able to strategically put that someplace to catch fire. Somebody else got to catch that,
yeah.
Right? Because this is more than the spark that you have. This is a flame. But if it's not around the right people, it's hard to kind of pick up. So we're hoping that we see you in some level of leadership as we go on in the future.
Only God will tell us.
Well, obviously, if he don't send his signature, the notary.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's the show with that. Well, the show's not over, but that's Jeffrey Lloyd, who's here in studio with us, being able to chop these things down.
Wish I could stay longer, sir, but unfortunately not.
I know. And I do appreciate that.
You can always call on me.
I do appreciate it, my brother. I thank you so very kindly for being able to sit with us and pouring into this conversation today. I hope you guys out there enjoyed that. Please send your text. I'm going to take this quick commercial break and get Mr. Lloyd out of here and be right back after this.
Foundation. The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The foundation. You've tried everything. ASUS with your mother's cousin's sister's auntie, and even hiding your money under your mattress. But is your money safe? Your Bahamian dollar deposit in a member bank or credit union is insured up to $50,000. If anything happens, your deposit up to the insured value will be returned to you thanks to Deposit Insurance. Visit Deposit Insurance Corporation at www.dic.bf.
Protection for your money guaranteed with DIC.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation.
Y'all heard of our ghost pepper wings? Well, they're back for a limited time. At any Popeyes, enjoy our famous ghost pepper wings, marinated in spicy Louisiana seasonings, including a touch of ghost pepper. Each wing is battered and breaded in Southern style, crispy coating, and then fried up. Try six today along with the buttermilk biscuit and a signature side. Stop in before they're gone.
Are they almost gone, babe?
Don't get left out this time.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and generators back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them 242-356-0249.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT.
Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, The Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at The Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with The Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation. The foundation. The foundation.
And we are back, 96.9 FM radio. Howard Grant in your company. The last quarter of the show. The lines are wide open if you want to be a part of the conversation. 323-625-4316-325-4259. Anywhere for the family of violence, 322-300-5720. And also you can hit me up 422-4796. We're chopping this thing down and being able to have, I think it was an invigorating conversation. I think so many of us actually see through the lens of politics. I didn't. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to sit with him. I am. And I'm grateful for that. And you all have to understand that I'm really not like, it's almost like, you know, not necessary to say it anymore politically, people in this country, nationally, no one cares. Everyone labels you in one party or another. But whether it's FNM, whether it's PLP, whether it's DNA, no matter who you are, if you have an idea that you want to kind of put out there and you want to be able to be a part of the conversation, I'd love you to do so. Give me a call. 827-0111. 827-0111. Text me and I'd be more than happy to get back to you to talk about this call. Now, some people have been texting me, how would I want to talk about? And I didn't necessarily see how it aligned with some of the things that I did on the show, that I do on the show, that I talk about. So if I call you back or if I just, you know, quietly and graciously say thanks for the opportunity, but I don't think that's the direction that the show goes. Don't fight me. Don't fight me for it. But there is sort of an idea that I want to perpetuate on the show to talk about national growth and development that gives you ideas to trouble the water of your thinking. That's all I want to do. To trouble the water of your thinking to say that, is there truly a opportunity? Is there truly a chance that we can get far beyond this position to move towards growth and development? That was Jeffrey Lloyd said with us, guys. The lines are open. I saw it blink and then it gone. Let me see if I can read one through these texts. So it says, Howard, can you ask the former minister if he will be offering himself in the coming election or if he has plans of going back to talk radio? He wouldn't even let me get to the talk radio part. He absolutely, unequivocally reject the idea. He invoked Gabriel, the archangel, the notary public from heaven, the signature of God, everything to get back into politics. And let me tell you something now. My grandmother tell me, watch me. My grandmother says to me, she says, baby, you ain't passed nothing till you're dead. I watch many a man in this same society talk to me. The same society, it's going to be as decent as possible. Say, I ain't never getting back into politics. God got to tell me to get back into politics. And then one different prime minister come or a different leader of the political organization come and then boom, they back in politics. So the question I ask, which God? Bananas. Let's have this very clear conversation. These things are out here. It says, you are a great minister, but the education system is garbage. Fix it. Teach these kids real world skills and expose them at an early age so they can get ahead. Let me see if I can take a telephone call. Is that a call? Call on the line with us live. Go ahead.
A pleasure. Good afternoon, Mr. Grant.
Hey, what's up, Sparky?
Well, I tell you, truly listening to that show, and very good show with my good buddy and brother from a different mother, Jeffrey Lloyd.
Yeah.
We all grew up together. I was at Government High, he was at SAC. The two cousins, so you might know Arthur Fountain and those from Les Fountain and everything in Freeport.
Yeah, in Freeport.
Okay, that's my cousin. They're 1 year old, but 1 year. 1 year younger than me, September the 1st, 1952. Happy belated birthday, my twin brothers, Arthur and Otto Fountain in Freeport. All of us grew up together in Twynham Avenue at Arthur and Otto's mother, Aunt Leela, me, Jeff, Willie Boone, Jeffrey Poitier, Philip Poitier, all of us. Nightclub and partying and everything together. Went to Eastern Junior, Eastern Senior, all that kind of thing together. But it was so nice to hear him say, after one time in the House of Assembly as a representative, that he ain't going back there even. Look here, Angel Gabriel and Michael come down here together.
But why is that nice, Sparky? I thought that was crazy.
How
bad you could get beat from people that you say you ain't never getting back?
I mean, the thing is, I believe when he was in that government with Minnis, a lot of them cabinet members was under some serious pressure, especially after Dorian and their camp missed the COVID-19.
All people say it's under heavy manners.
I mean, the country was under pressure.
See, under heavy manners. It was
Howard, you remember being scared to drive down the road after 6 in the dark? You ain't know what time it is. And barriers all around the road and police with all kind of guns standing on. What's going on? You're trying to get home, and you don't know if it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and you ready to curfew.
The country full of Cinderellas, so everybody trying to...
The country shut down, and first time in my 72 years, the country... Howard, my neighbor used to stand by the fence across the road from me in his mask.
Sparky, tell your girlfriend, call back.
My mask.
Sparky, tell your girlfriend.
Phone sense to talk to one another.
Tell your girlfriend, call back. You got the phone ringing off, ringing off, ringing off.
No, that's somebody. That's WhatsApp. Somebody.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
But you know, Howard, that was a scary time. You know, and trying to delete this person, deny it. The phone wouldn't deny. But anyway, Howard, that was the scariest time in most Bahamian people's life. Are you still there, Howard?
You believe that the
Howard,
prime
the
minister...
Howard, yours, you hear him going to the hospital and tell me to come back.
Yeah.
When I heard my friend Barry Sawyer on top of Hawkins Hill, a nephew, Sawyer Boy, going in there. Boy, a whole little while he was praying for Sawyer Boy.
Yeah.
Because you know Sawyer Boy, Daddy Marky Sawyer. Mm-hmm. All of us grew up together in the valley. All of us was praying for Sawyer Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Sawyer Boy tell us he thought he was gone dead.
Yeah, he said he thought he was gone.
This country went through everything, and the people who were in the cabinet during Minnis time, they was under some heavy manners and heavy pressure.
But some of them still won't go back. And some of them still, they got allegiance to Minnis.
This is all their life, you know. You got some people done retired as prime ministers, still involved with the party and advising people what to do. Still showing up to all kind of balls and party events and everything. And some of them gone back. I don't know, think they even went back to their law practice. And still
that's
getting
true.
Paid.
They get pension.
Pension for life.
They're good.
When you lose your job, you might get a pension. Some of them getting two pension.
Well, if you got to depend on NIB, praise God.
NIB?
You might not get nothing.
Look at Howard. I was there when NIB started. I was working at Deltec International, Cumberland and Marlborough Street, when NIB started. And I thought the money coming out of my place when I retired, I got a good bunch of money, you know. I thought I got all kind of money to live nice and free, you know. Then I worked to plenty different places. Howard, let me tell you something. When you retire, you find out, when you go to NIB, you find out, hey, why my money so small? They say, you know how much people you work for never made contribution?
My God.
You know how much companies, and I can name the companies I work for, take my money out of my doggone, out of my salary. I see it coming out of my pay slip. And when I doggone go to NASA, you didn't work to this place, you didn't work. I said, what do you mean I didn't work there? All my family, I know I worked to this one and that one and the next one. They had me only working about three places.
Wow, Sparky. I appreciate your telephone call, my brother. I thank you for your contribution. He's a good, decent man. I thank you for you to be able to talk like that. Sometimes it's important to be a little nostalgic about these things. I like that. Sometimes. Talk to me. Sometimes. Don't fight me, right? So we can do those things. Guys, you know the numbers. Let me see if I can read one or two of these texts before we get out of here. It says, the problem, it says, Mr. Lloyd is on point. Education takes the whole village. Implement an educational authority with complete autonomy. Excellent show, Howard. I thank you so much. It says, the problem is most ministries is that the wrong people are in key places. Too much political interference and a lack of will. Was that a telephone call? Caller on the line? No? Guys, the lines are wide open if you want to be able to give me a call on that. Let me see if I can read a couple more of these texts. It says, Howard, is it too funny how Jeffrey sound so perfect? But there was so much problems at education. When you in opposition, you say anything that sounds nice. Hypocrisy. Glennis Hannah Martin indicated that these are longstanding issues. I don't think with transparency, anyone could come in any sector of government of the Bahamas and indicate that there weren't issues or there aren't issues. Let's just be very clear about that. In opposition, you have an opportunity to be able to theorize, to give a hypothetical, to paint a picture of what can possibly happen. But when you find yourself stepping over the threshold into leadership, sometimes, more often than not, you have to get in line. Let me take the telephone call. Call on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Howard.
Hey, my dear, what's happening with you?
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Listen, I see Lee slowing down and losing some strength there.
Who's that?
The Storm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to see that. Over the weekend, I look at that and somebody say, boy, these Bahamian people could pray now.
I did.
You know, everybody, oh, God, I pull it down today. Church is book up.
you know, so later that's going to be somebody prophecy. You know, they're going to say the prophesy.
We're waiting for the prophesy. We're waiting for it.
Listen, about Mr. Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
I love listening to him talk and the stuff that they implemented. But my thing is, I don't understand the Bahamian people, right? How is it because you are on the outside now looking in, you should have no views? I don't get that. It just may be me, but I see like whether you in there or out there and been there and did not do, does not stop you from having a view. Mm-hmm. Or a point to prove.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, if we take some of these things people say in opposition and use them when you are in government, they may have the idea, but you may have a better way to implement it. So mm-hmm. I don't see why when you out you should not have a view. That makes no sense to me because it takes two and three persons view together to get something to come together and make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I agree with you. I believe that once we charge the atmosphere, the reason why we have these shows and theorize about all these things and talk about concepts and ideas is because there is someone out there that's listening in that just probably happened to turn the radio on that had an idea lingering in his or her head. And when we say something, bam, it sparks it. And what about this? People need to get up and really participate in this society. That's all this is for me.
Exactly. Look at the idea that Mr. Tinderhouse for the government to start making managers and stuff and moving these permanent secretaries from places. And to me, that sounded like a good idea. Today, it may not sound like a good idea to some of these persons who want to lose their position. However, at the end of the day, I feel like that is where government has to lean in order to get things done in government.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because when you have these permanent secretaries there that was from Pilden time, mm-hmm. a lot of them would still make decisions geared towards their government versus the other government. You understand? That's how I see it. So I feel like moving them and starting over or giving them a certain term to be there and then have new persons vie for that position, I feel like that would be a better thing. and the ideas that Mr. Lloyd has given out for education. I heard something that Ms. Martin said that she wants to do. I would love that for my son, leaning towards children who need help in grade 10 to better their BJC score.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel I want to know when that's going to start, because I ready to sign my child up today.
I appreciate it.
The two ideas together would make it work. Like you say, it takes a family. From I was a child, I always said it takes a family to a village to raise a child.
I appreciate
that. Mr. Lloyd out, still have views. So you shouldn't knock them out.
Yeah. I thank you so much for your call, my dear. I didn't want to, man, I can't throw this man away. I can't. You understand? I've been trying to be absolutely very clear and be honest with you. There are some people I've spoken to from this government standpoint who ran after me. Can I say that? Can I say this? Is it okay? They ran after me. Whether I was on, the other station, ZNS, More 94, wherever I was, they randomly blow up my phone when they were in opposition. And now, now I call them, hey, what's up, brother? Howard, I won't be able to make it. Bop. It's just what it is. You understand? There is a perception associated with politics. And there is a perception associated with being able to be any level of transparent when you have the helm of leadership in the country. I don't fight these people. I know in due time and due season, they're coming back to sit with us. So I don't fight them. Jeffrey Lloyd, one of the persons who found the time to sit with me once or twice during his tenure, and other members of parliament and other cabinet ministers who had an opportunity to be able to sit with me during their tenure, I'm grateful for that. Now he's say free. He just came off a major surgery, so forth and so on. Don't fight him. I still think he has something to offer. The same way I feel about Joe Beth Kobe. I told you guys this. I don't think that we should throw people away because of the politics, because of the issues that existed in yesteryear. Do I kneel down on the ground and start to write in the sand? I'm Jesus. I just want to be very clear. All of us, we endure, we go through trial and tribulation. It should be an opportunity for you to be able to speak. And I want to give you that chance. Let me take this next telephone call. Caller, you on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Grant. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I thought your conversation today with Mr. Lloyd was quite interesting.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate his way. Also, too, as a Minister of Education, I wanted to say, too, what I think is lacking in the public educational system
mm-hmm.
are psychologists or teachers of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Because human development or developing of the full person as an individual, not only in academics, but also in the social constructs. I believe that the ministry should incorporate persons, just like how they have guidance counselors, but the children reach to the guidance counselors once the problem has occurred.
Now, let me ask you this question before you go on. How does $35,000 a year sound as a psychologist?
Well, you know, it's not all about the money, because we're talking about human development. We're talking about development of a people.
So they could just volunteer if it ain't all about the money.
Well, I don't think volunteering would be sufficient. But I think when we speak about development and human development, we want to develop the human from an academic perspective as well as a psychological perspective, a social perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look at the whole child, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I believe, I don't think for persons who are interested in helping to develop society would not think anything about receiving $35,000 per annum.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, their contribution to education and to human development can go a long way.
Wow.
And in fact, it can go from one generation into the other generation.
It's an amazing thing.
And sometimes children are victims of their environment.
Yes, I agree with you.
Sometimes the parents does not have the academic ability.
Yes.
To help their children. So you need other arms of persons that can assist.
I agree with you.
But that's my 5 cents.
I appreciate you. I thank you so very kindly. The only reason I threw that in there because having a conversation with Mr. Lloyd off air indicated that persons with a master's degree with the pinnacle certification and qualification within their particular their profession enter into the public school system and making the same thing as the engineer, making the same thing as these persons and the family of islands and all these. There is a gap. And this is why he started to talk about the educational reform. Now, be it as it may, you know, I started off my relationship with my wife in nothing but love. Now, don't get me wrong. It isn't me saying I don't love her. But we started off in all kind of flowers and kissing and this and that, hugging hand and listen, our hand sweating when we hold it so much all the time. Oh, God, I love the woman so bad. She's sitting on my lap, I biting her neck. Oh, my God, I love the woman bad. And then real life hits. She pregnant. Huh? She having children for me. I got to put her someplace. I need to take care of my family. We could all start in Pleasantville. But one day out of seven, we got to walk through Baintown where the reality meets. The reality exists in this space. In Pinewood, in Camp Road, in Baintown. This is the survival that we have to navigate in our society. And so I don't know whether or not the educational authority will be the arm that actually could transform things in the country from an educational standpoint and provide incentives for growth and development. But I know that we have to start somewhere to get these teachers back involved in the class. What we've seen happen throughout the years with teachers and how teachers have kind of their hands off now. There are teachers who used to bring you home and take you on the weekend and so forth and so on. Based upon what we've seen happen in the system over the years, they say, oh, hell no, I ain't getting close to nobody's child. Things have changed. And I want to be able to be as decent as possible. I can give this caller 30 seconds. Caller, you on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Well, you don't give me no 30 seconds, man. No, come on, man.
You got 3 minutes before. You got 3 minutes before. To get,
huh?
You got 3 minutes before I close out. Go ahead.
No, you're supposed to be looking at your phone and say, let me see if this thing will make sense.
You must have.
I can't accept the thing. Anyway.
Go ahead.
One of the things we do not do, Howard, and I can be sure, is planning. See, Howard, that's the problem in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plan. I plan for all my children. Every single one. Because I know if I plan, let me give an example and then I can hang up. Howard, how could you, as a pilot, do not set your course on where you're going? How could you be as a boat captain, leave port without your destination? Come on, man. That's what we don't do in this country. And that's not being taught in this country. We have to plan. That's why we're in the situation that we're in today. Even with politics and everything else. Talk to you later, buddy.
I appreciate you, man. I agree with you saying. I like what you're saying. You have to plan. I can tell you how my children, I didn't plan to have none of them. The only thing I plan is to have a good time today. The only thing I plan at the moment is, I'm pregnant? I said, you want to take it back? Just, what you want me to do? Chop it up and make you eat the thing like that? I got to sprinkle it in your orange juice? Listen. In faith. We say, Lord, let your will be done. You must see all these children get taken care of. I think a lot of the country is operating like that. A lot of the country operates like that. Child, I know how these children eat. But they do the best they can possibly do. Guys, that is the show. Let me see if I can read one of these. Howard, he ain't lying, because one child you never plan for. Right? Let's see. He says, said the nerve of the former minister who asked the churches to work for free to get their educational system where it needs to be. And then being surprised that the churches wanted funding. Of course, they needed funding. Electricity, internet, people need more money. Nothing for free except salvation. Stop blaming the church. If the Ministry of Education knew the problem, put money where your mouth is and fund it all. Pretty talks, no action. You know, and to your point, his administration shut down the churches too. To your point. The administration shut down the churches and the mortgage still needed to be paid for the churches. But the flip side of that is that the idea infiltrated the minds of the church. That same idea that infiltrated this independence, all for me, baby concept, gimme me, baby, that infiltrated the church also, because the church was the forerunner of our community at one point. The church was where you ran in for refuge. Now,
You better get straight and bring you something. Listen, next caller, I can't take no more calls. We flat out of time. Caller, I thank you so much for being able to tune in. Guys, I thank you so much for being able to participate. I hope you enjoyed that conversation today. I was hoping that we could be able to stretch it for the 2 hours, but I know that he's a busy man, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. Tomorrow, like I said, somebody tell me, say, Howard, let's talk politics on Tuesdays. Do you want to do that? Because I don't want to talk about this approval rating for the prime minister at the top 60%. This is bananas. This is absolutely bananas. Did they only ask the stalwart members of the PLP? Is that where you took your sample from? You need to stop it. You're wilding out. Tomorrow we can talk about it. Guys, that's the show today. I thank you so very kindly. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation. We're going to see you tomorrow right here, God Spare Our Lives, on 96.9, and chop this thing down live and in full effect like we always do. Have a beautiful day, guys. Stick and stay for Chivago right after this. Foundation.
The Foundation with Howard Grant is brought to you by Alive, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, the Deposit Insurance Corporation, Grand Bahama News, Popeyes, and Ross Electric Motors. Foundation.